Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On January 8, 2008, the Supreme Court handed down a decision in the John R. Sand and Gravel Company v. United States case. The court was asked to consider whether or not the Tucker Act's six-year statute of limitations is jurisdictional and thus may not be waived by the parties. The Supreme Court decided that litigants bringing suit in the Court of Federal Claims must adhere to a strict six-year statute of limitations, even if the government is willing to waive that requirement. In this episode of SCOTUSCast, University of St. Thomas School of Law, Professor Gregory Sisk discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society itself takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Sisk.
This is Professor Gregory Sisk of the University of St. Thomas School of Law in Minnesota. I was also co-counsel for the petitioner in the John R. Sand and Gravel v. United States case, that was decided by the Supreme Court on January 8, 2008. The issue before the Supreme Court in John R. Sand was one that only a lawyer could love. The question was whether the statute of limitations that applies to claims brought against the federal government in the United States Court of Federal Claims is jurisdictional. In other words, is this an ordinary statute of limitations? That is, an affirmative defense and a procedural time limitation that may be waived by the government? Or instead, is this a special and absolute rule of subject matter jurisdiction, one that cannot be waived by the government and that the court must raise on its own motion, even if both the claimant and the government agree that the claim was timely filed? Now, despite the esoteric sound of the question, asking whether the statute of limitations that governs claims against the federal government may be waived, just as in private civil cases, is only the most visible part of a broader and more fundamental question of how strictly or generously the court should regard statutes enacted by Congress that waive the sovereign immunity of the United States. For nearly 20 years, the Supreme Court has been moving, haltingly but steadily, toward a jurisprudential approach to statutory waivers of sovereign immunity, under which the substantive scope of the consent to suit is construed strictly in favor of the government. But procedural rules, emphatically including statutes of limitations, are applied in the same manner as among private parties. To briefly outline the facts, this was a case alleging a physical taking of private property by the government for which just compensation is due under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. John R. Sand operates a sand, gravel, and stone quarry on land that it leases in Michigan. A landfill had been operated by the landowner in a corner of this leased land, which the Environmental Protection Agency later placed on its national priority list of hazardous waste sites. Beginning in the 1990s, the EPA took various actions to remediate the site, including putting up and then later taking down fences that temporarily restricted access by John R. Sand to parts of its leasehold. Then in 1998, the EPA erected permanent fences that completely and permanently excluded John R. Sand from 42 acres of its leasehold, including at least 15 acres of uncontaminated and easily mineable sand and gravel. In 2002, John R. Sand filed a suit seeking compensation for this taking in the United States Court of Federal Claims under a statute known as the Tucker Act. While the United States initially pled the six-year statute of limitations as a defense and argued that the claim had accrued in the early 1990s, after discovery, the government stipulated, and the Court of Federal Claims agreed, the claim had not accrued until 1998 when the permanent fence was installed, a time period well within the six-year statute of limitations. On later appeal to the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, the government attorney, when asked at oral argument, openly agreed that the claim had accrued within that six-year period and thus was within the statute of limitations. But the Federal Circuit held that this statute of limitations was jurisdictional and thus could not be waived by the government. The Federal Circuit then held that the claim had accrued earlier when the EPA had temporarily interfered with John R. Sand's access to the site. The Supreme Court granted review limited to the question of whether this statute of limitations, 28 United States Code Section 2501, is jurisdictional. Section 2501 of Title 28, the statute of limitations at issue in John R. Sand, might have been an easy case for a more generous reading under the court's modern approach to statutory waivers of sovereign immunity. The plain language of the statute suggested that the jurisdictional inquiry was to be separately completed before application of the time limitation. The statute reads, quote, "Every claim of which the United States Court of Federal Claims has jurisdiction shall be barred unless the petition thereon is filed within 6 years after such claim first accrues." The legislative history when the predecessor statute was enacted in 1863 indicated that members of Congress expected the statute of limitations to apply to the government in the same manner as to private parties. The 19th century contemporary legal understanding at the time was that a statute of limitations was a waivable defense. Indeed, Congress had selected language from typical state statutes of limitations of the period, thus creating Section 2501 as what the Supreme Court, in its decision in Franconia Associates versus United States in 2002, called an unexceptional statute of limitations. When Congress recodified Title 28 of the United States Code in 1948, Section 2501 was placed in a procedural chapter, separate in location and distinctly different in language from the jurisdictional chapter. In deciding the John R. Sand case, the Supreme Court really disagreed with none of these points. But a majority of the court nonetheless held that the statute of limitations had jurisdictional force, requiring a court to raise on its own the timeliness of a lawsuit filed in the Court of Federal Claims despite the government's waiver of the issue. The court's decision, in an opinion authored by Justice Breyer, was grounded squarely and exclusively in stare decisis, adhering to an 1883 line of cases from a very early stage in the court's sovereign immunity jurisprudence, a period that reflected a rigid jurisdictional attitude towards the then novel concept of legislation that afforded a general judicial remedy against the federal government for monetary claims. The majority in John R. Sand acknowledged that the court's more recent decisions, quote, "represent a turn in the course of the law," quote, and admitted that the contrasting lines of case authority may create a, quote, "anomaly." But the majority found that the conflict was not critical and did not produce unworkable law so as to justify overturning supposedly well-settled precedent. Justices Stevens and Ginsburg dissented, both agreeing that the jurisdictional rule affirmed by the majority had been expressly abandoned in prior decisions. They argue that any ambiguity in the case law, quote, "ought to be resolved in favor of clarifying the law rather than preserving an anachronism whose doctrinal underpinnings were discarded years ago," unquote. Whither then the Supreme Court's jurisprudence on statutory waivers of sovereign immunity? In so many ways over the past 60 years, the court has moved beyond a narrow and restrictive posture towards statutes that afford citizens a day in court with claims against the government. The court instead has developed a more mature and refined approach toward the increasingly common judicial encounter with statutes authorizing suit against the United States. In dissent, Justice Stevens feared that the John R. Sand decision might, quote, "revive the confusion of that earlier jurisprudence." Instead, I believe it is more likely that the John R. Sand case will stand as what Justice Stevens also called a carve-out, That is, statutes that had been subject to previous Supreme Court constructions under the prior and now abandoned rigid construction stance may be allowed to survive in isolation. But if John R. Stand does prove to be only a bump on the road toward a modern and cohesive regime for interpretation and application of statutory waivers of sovereign immunity, it nonetheless is a pretty big bump that threatens to rip off the muffler and make for a very noisy ride for the foreseeable future. First, a money suit in the Court of Federal Claims is the vehicle for a large category of important claims against the federal government for takings of property under the Fifth Amendment, certain contract claims, breach of trust claims by Indian tribes, military employment claims, etc. An exception from the general rules of sovereign immunity jurisprudence for all of these categories of claims leaves a pretty large hole in the doctrine. Second, in the modern age, there is a rather long list of statutory waivers of sovereign immunity in which new questions of statutory construction come up nearly every day in the federal courts. The lower federal courts now have to decide which interpretive approach should they follow. Should they apply a rigid jurisdictional approach from an earlier stage in the court's jurisprudence, which now has been revived, at least for some issues, by the John R. Stand decision? Or instead, should the courts follow the approach that the Supreme Court has followed for the past 20 years, under which it gives a strict and fairly narrow construction to the substantive scope of statutory waivers of sovereign immunity, but applies an ordinary statutory interpretation approach to procedures, applying them in the same manner that they would apply among private parties? In the end, I think the Supreme Court eventually will wander back onto the path that it has followed for the past two decades, and the John R. Stand decision will prove to be but a momentary detour.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.